Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event. Able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey, you're listening to Superhero Speak. I'm your host, Dave.
And Ben.
And John.
And so, everyone, we are celebrating because we are now the podcast of the month on podcastland.com. Celebrate, guys. Yay!
Hey, there must not have been that many votes this month.
So thank you to everyone who has voted for us. And thanks to everyone who has stayed loyal listeners. And if you're discovering us now through Podcast Land, and this is your first podcast listening to us, we apologize in advance. And please go back and listen to some of the older episodes, because there's a lot of good ones out there. Some bad ones, but you know.
Yeah, I've got a lot of shame.
Wait, which ones are the good ones?
Oh, God.
I don't remember you not being in any of the days.
I always thought our superhero or Superman debate one was pretty good.
That one was pretty good. And speaking of which, we probably should do that, something like that, for the upcoming Captain America movie.
I think we should.
So stay tuned, our one listener.
I know, actually, I just watched the movie Planes for the first time. And,
oh, yeah.
And in the one scene, like the main character was feeling down, and this little car comes up, and he's like, I'm a big fan. He goes, oh, I have fans? And he goes, oh, just the one. And I know how they felt. So did you guys do anything exciting this weekend?
Not as much as I'd like.
How about you, John?
I shoveled snow and more snow.
Well, I attended the convention, the New York Comic Book Marketplace.
Wait, is that where our budget went? I was wondering where all the money for this went. Oh, man.
Yes, you guys don't get to eat this week. Sorry.
Again?
Yeah. For those who don't know, it's a one-day show that takes place in New York, usually around this time of the year, which is, you know, beginning of March, end of February. And it's a good little convention. It's more comic book focused, more artists and writers are there versus celebrities. But I actually had a lot of fun because I got to catch up with some people. For those who are regular listeners of the show, I got to catch up with Brimstone, who's been a guest. And cool. John Pross and some of the other people that have been on the Joe Carbone, who's been on the show, Eric Cooper, you know, they were all there. That was fun. And what was really great is I got a chance to talk to Rich Buckler. And for those who don't know who Rich Buckler is, first off, you shouldn't be listening to this podcast.
That includes us, I think. But
he is an artist and a writer, worked for Marvel for many years, and he created Deathlok.
Oh,
yeah.
I've heard of that name before.
Yes. You've heard of the name too, right, John?
Yes, but it's kind of interesting. I mean, you know, I didn't know we had the technology to build a robot man these days. He created him. Yeah, I'd love to see that.
And for those who have been following along with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they have now included that character on the show. So I got a chance to talk to him about it a little bit. And one of the things I asked is, what do you think of your creation being used on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? And he stopped for a minute and thought about it, and he was like, you know, a lot of people are asking me about that, and he said he's happy that you know, he sees the characters being used on, not forgotten about. He was happy that he got credit in the credits. So if you watch the ending credits of the show,
oh, nice.
His name does come up. But you know, he said that it's very different than the character he created. You know,
well.
More of a modern version, and it's true, the original version was very much like the Terminator.
Yeah, and I did read some of the details about that before that episode even aired, just, you know, and I was thinking as I was reading, I was like, this, I can't see him turning into this version of this character, because it seemed very, for one, it seemed like a pretty dark character. I mean, it was a villain, and I don't, right. Even though we know that Mike Peterson is being controlled through the eye technology by the clairvoyant. Mm-hmm. I think that anything that he does on, you know, on the dark side of things is really going to be coerced. It's not going to really be within his own, you know, free will. So.
Right. Yeah. No. And then I asked him, so have they asked you to consult, or would you consider consulting on the show? You know, if they asked you, and he said that they probably won't ask him because, again, it's a completely different version than what he created, and he would probably want to be more true to his creation and would go too dark with it anyway. So
yeah, that's
so fair. So as long as he gets the credit, he's happy. So that was good. Yeah, so I mean that was fun, and then, you know, got to hang out with some other people. I got to hang out with Neil Adams actually a little bit. That was fun, and then, you know, saw people I haven't seen in a while, and that was my weekend. So,
well, sounds like yours was much more interesting and fascinating than ours.
Yes, I'm so glad I didn't have to shovel.
I'm so glad I didn't have to shovel this morning, but that's a different story.
Yeah, well, that's true.
So, but speaking of hanging out with interesting characters, I heard some interesting news about a new Disneyland thing in Tomorrowland involving Captain America.
I think I heard about that too. Why don't you tell us more about it, Ben?
Well, it seems that Disney is embracing their ownership of the Marvel Cinematic Universe by presenting in the Tomorrowland area their new exhibit titled Captain America, the Living Legend and Symbol of Courage. And they're timing that release along with the Captain America, the Winter Soldier release. So, which is pretty cool. And it's inside the Tomorrowland building, along with the Iron Man tech presented by Stark Industries and Thor, Treasures of Asgard. And I was looking through some of the pictures, and there's a lot of cool things in that exhibit. For just with the existing stuff that they have for Thor and for Iron Man are really cool. And what they show of what they're setting up for Captain America is really awesome, too. It makes me wish that I hadn't gone to Disney yet and could go, or at least will go again, have a reason to go yet again with my family.
Yeah, no, I was looking at the pictures, too. It's interesting because it has a very museum feel to it when you look at it.
Right, but it's like a Hollywood-type museum because it's a museum of all their paraphernalia from the movies.
Yes, like a wax museum almost.
Yeah.
So that was cool. The I'm kind of curious if the props in the exhibit are replicas or if they're the actual props from the movies.
That's an excellent question. I would imagine that for the most part they're probably replicas because I'd imagine the actual real things could go for a pretty penny, and they might still be using some of them. So
right.
Do they have a Captain America frozen in carbonite? Oh, not I mean ice. Yet. Sorry, I mean ice. Right, right.
You're getting your Disney properties confused again.
Oh, damn it! Hey, when that happens, there are just so many of them.
Yes, don't get your Marvel in your Star Wars.
So, but no, they have a lot of really cool things, like is the original Captain America costume, the new updated costume that he wore in Avengers, an array of the different shield prototypes for his vibranium shield, and
the plane he couldn't fly.
But it's that sort of what I like about this is that it's all this stuff, like, you could never see this stuff in amusement parks before. Like, lots of amusement parks tried to do thematic stuff around some heroes before, like Six Flags, I think, had a Batman-themed roller coaster at one point. But, like, you don't get stuff like this. Like, it hasn't existed yet previous to now, and it's just exciting times to live in with these things coming up and being there for us to experience and our kids to experience. And it's, you know, I'm kind of embracing the Disney conglomeration of things. Like it feels a little weird and dirty sometimes of them owning everything, but they treat it well and they're doing a good job with it. And I'm okay with it.
Well, and that's true too. And I think Disney is one of the only parks you could get away with exhibits like this. It doesn't really work at a lot of the other theme parks.
Right, right.
You know, but Disney's absolutely been doing this for decades now. So
yeah,
you go into the Hall of Heroes or whatever they're calling it, and you can see a setup for Iron Man. And yeah, I'm looking at the one picture, and it's the setup we've seen at all the conventions and from the movies where you've got the cases behind him with the different suits in it, and then you have the Mark 42 up front, you know. And
that's good stuff.
Yeah. For those of us who didn't get to San Diego Comic-Con, we can go there and see it.
Hmm.
Now, I'm curious, though. They mention in this article that I read that it's they're setting this up at Disneyland in Anaheim, California. I'm curious if they'll set up a copy of it in Disney World in Florida as well.
They were talking about that. There was didn't I hear they were? Oh no, they're setting up Star Wars stuff in Disney World. That's right. They were knocking some stuff down to expand and add like a new Star Wars attraction. So
yeah,
That's a good question.
Disney World is a lot larger though, yes, than Disneyland. So I'd imagine they, while they may be concentrating on the Star Wars stuff now, there's probably room for them to do the same Marvel stuff there as well when they get to that.
Yes, Disney, remember us on the East Coast. don't want to have to go all the way across the country to see it.
Yeah.
Just down to Florida. We can do that. So
along the lines of costumes, I read about an interesting new costume preview that got revealed this past week, and that would be the first shot of The Flash.
Yes.
For the new upcoming series.
Yes. Now, we only got to see his head, which was...
Yeah, which doesn't tell us much. It looks mostly like it might be leather or maybe some version of that material he made the Arrow's mask out of, but I'm sure we'll see more at some point. I'm curious, though, will we not see this until its own spinoff, or is it possible that we'll see it at the end of this season of Arrow?
I think, I would guess that they'll show it in Arrow, because why would they start so much hype now and then make us wait till September?
I see your point, but at the same time,
I think... executives.
Well, I think they've already said that we will see, Gustin come back as Barry Allen towards the end of this season in Arrow. But I think maybe they might limit it to just him waking up from his coma and maybe sort of discovering his abilities and not really like saving that whole origin and development for the pilot itself. Like, because to have him jump in as the Flash, unless there's a time shift element that they're gonna, like, they'll show him showing up in the suit, and then in the pilot you rewind and they show all the leading up to that point in that first episode, maybe. I don't know. They could do it a couple different ways.
Right. I do like the pictures, and it's funny because I liked the original Flash TV show in the 90s.
Oh, good. You know it too.
We all know it.
Everyone knows it. Come on, Mark Hamill was in it. How can you not know it?
True.
As the cock knocker. No, wait, that was something else.
No.
The costume was the costume was good for the 90s.
I was gonna say for the 90s.
Wasn't it like nearly velvet essentially?
Yeah, and it was shaded strategically.
Yeah.
It was good.
Right. There's concepts in there, too, where, like, yeah, they shaded it for the muscle tone like they did in the Spider-Man costume. It wasn't overly...
Well, they shaded it and probably padded it as well.
Right. And then it wasn't overly... it was a little more, a more serious take on the costume. But yet now when you see the new one, you're like, oh, okay, that's a little more realistic looking. Like in the original, he had those things sticking out of the side of the mask. Where this now there's like a lightning bolt and it's on the mask. It's
like not a logo on the side of the mask.
Right, yeah. Right.
Which I think makes a little bit more sense, strategically, aerodynamically. It seems silly to have something actually sticking off unless it serves a purpose.
Right.
Yeah. Making sure that your logo covers your ears is very strategic, I think.
Yes. We don't need
very helpful
protruding ears. Well,
you don't want to create too much drag when you're running.
Exactly. You don't want those ears flopping in the wind. But I think they've also strategically hired someone to play the role who's thin and has that sort of runner's build to him that I think fits better. Like, I mean, I liked that original show, although looking back on it is really hard to watch now. It doesn't hold up that well.
No.
But the guy looked like, a maroon version of the Tick. Like, he was a little bit, he was
he
a little
does.
Bit too
You're
muscular
right.
for that role.
Well, so. if you do a Google search on Flash series, the second image that comes up is the Flash costume blue.
Interesting.
I don't know what it's from, but it's blue.
That was when he changed his name to be the Tick.
Maybe.
Hold on. It was. I'm sure it was like a Flash villain. Like, there's the anti-Flash.
You mean Dr. Zoom?
Dr. Zoom. Right. So Polox. P P-O-L-L-U-S.
Pollux.
Pollux. Yeah.
A clone of Barry Allen, right?
Yes. See, it wasn't just random.
It was,
but, you know, it was their homage to the Tick. I mean, come on. You gotta have that.
It wasn't random. It was just dumb.
The Tick, another underrated TV series. Come on.
Oh, very underrated.
Yeah. Although, you know what? To be fair, I never actually watched the live-action version. I only watched the cartoon.
No.
Which I love.
Don't yeah. watch the live-action.
Okay, don't. Good.
It does not exist. It is like The Matrix 2 and 3. It never happened.
No, The Matrix 2 and 3 happened. I'm sorry, John.
Actually, it was speaking of The Matrix, did you guys hear that they may be making a new Matrix trilogy that's possibly a prequel?
Oh, but...
What?
But don't worry, the Wachowski brothers are on the case.
Wait, what?
They're in charge?
I believe so. You didn't hear about this at all?
They're going to go all Lucas on it, man. Come on.
How can you make one movie that was so good and then ruin it with two more and then go, okay, now let's ruin it with three more?
Again, see Lucas. They're going Lucas on it. Dude, it's exactly the same thing. Three prequels.
Oh, my
goodness.
I would
be surprised if there's a Jar Jar Binks in the damn thing.
Oh, yes. The what would the Matrix equivalent to Jar Jar Binks be?
God. Number five. Johnny Five. That's it right there.
He is one of those machines that they drop into the bottom of the ocean.
Oh.
And there was much rejoicing.
We're shit. We no see shit. Oh, God. The only line I remember from that movie.
Oh, man.
So.
Yeah. So, well, great. Good for them. You know, I wish them the best of luck.
No, you don't. You wish you would die in the water.
Can't believe anyone would back another set of movies at this point.
Yeah,
that'd be like giving M. Night Shyamalan another go at it. I mean, please.
Yeah.
Well, he made one really good movie.
Yes, and then he made After Earth.
Which one would that be?
Oh, wait, he made After Earth?
Yes, he made After Earth.
Oh, that's bad.
Yeah, even the guys through Honest Trailers couldn't get through it. It was just really, ugh.
So speaking of movies that didn't happen.
Ben with the segues tonight.
I am Mr. Segway today. So did you guys read about the pre-Zack Snyder potentials for Watchmen?
Yes, from Terry Gilliam. Yes.
Right. Now, Terry Gilliam, to give him his fair due, you know, he directed Brazil and a couple other, you know, solid movies in his day. So I think that they're, you know, I think Zack's being a little bit overly, overzealously against his ideas. But, because honestly, when I read about his potential idea to it, I actually thought it sounded interesting. I thought it sounded not completely insane as Zack referred to it.
Okay, so you'll have to enlighten me about this, because this one I did not get to read.
Okay, so here's the deal. Before Zack Snyder took the reins of making the Watchmen movie happen, there was studio effort to put this together with a script that Terry Gilliam had proposed. And in his version, he sticks closer to the comic book story, especially with the ending, which is one of the things that they changed in the version that they did make. He sticks with the original ending. However, he comes up with an alternate aspect of the ending that was not in the comics. And what that is, like, he sort of takes focus away from the whole giant squid monster thing to focus on the discussion between Ozymandias and Dr. Manhattan, and have it be about how, and have Ozymandias actually convince Dr. Manhattan that this was all his fault, that this version of the world happening was because of his creation in the first place. And in doing so, convinces Dr. Manhattan that he needs to go back and keep himself from being. And so he does, and it causes a ripple effect to where you see Times Square, where, you know, a moment before there was this squid monster that the heroes were contending against, and you still see the heroes there, but they're cosplay, you know, actors, and there's kids with comic books of the Watchmen that they're coming up to get signatures for. So they never existed as real superheroes as a team.
Right. And I don't know. It's interesting that Hollywood, you know, did not like the original ending to the book whatsoever.
Which I can understand, because the squid monster is kind of a weird thing. And I think it was a sign of the times, really.
Along those lines, kids, recreational drugs are not something you want to get into.
However, Terry Gilliam is... His idea is very true to the idea of the book, mm-hmm. in the sense of if a real superhero existed with powers, and that being Dr. Manhattan, mm-hmm. you know,
the government would take him over in a half a second.
It being an omnipotent being that would alter our history as we knew it, you know, yeah, and the world would be a very different place. That's why Nixon was president for, you know, four consecutive terms as opposed to, you know, being a one and done. And, and you know, that's why the Cold War was very different, because they were afraid of us, and we won Vietnam because we had this power behind us.
Right. And even in the version that we did get in the theaters, there was some of those illusions were there. You know, you saw there was a scene, which was a famous scene in history anyway, with like the hippies protesting the war and there being a line of soldiers, and like one of the hippies puts a flower into the barrel of the gun.
Uh-huh.
That is based on real historic event that happened, protest that happened, and it came out peacefully in reality. But in the movie, they fired upon these people, and that's part of that ripple effect of how this military state existed as a cascade effect to Dr. Manhattan's existence.
Right. So I mean, that's the thing. And yeah, Snyder said that there would have been protests and uprisings from the fans if they had done an ending like that, but
I don't know though. I think sounds viable. I think it actually cements the whole thing. I mean, it adds an element that wasn't there. I get that. But at the same time, that's like a Kaiser Soze ending there, you know?
Right. So yeah, that's, it's fascinating. I think I would have enjoyed that, you know, but it would have been one of those, when I saw it in the movie theater, I would have been like, ew, they changed it. And then I would have thought about it afterwards of like, you know, but it was brilliant and it was keeping to the theme of the book.
Yeah.
Alan Moore still would have hated it.
Oh, well.
Probably, but I think that was inevitable.
Alan Moore hates everything.
Yeah,
he hates superhero speak. You know that? He's never heard it.
Oh,
but
right. We've made it to the big time then.
He's never heard us, but he hates us. I'm telling you.
He must truly be successful now.
Yes. Well, we sometimes find that these masterminds of great comics are not always right in the opinions that they hold.
Even another about their own stuff.
Right. Another such example would be Mark Millar being wrong about digital comics.
Oh, Mark Millar.
Oh, yes. Nice segue. Bravo.
I'm stitching it together here, guys.
Oh, that wasn't just a stitch, man. That was a braid. That was very good. I'm impressed. And now that I've ruined it, go for it.
You know what? I'll let Dave take this one.
Wow.
Here it is on a platter for you.
Well, just like everyone, when digital started coming out and was becoming more popular, you know, a lot of creators were not behind digital comics, right? I mean, there's lots of reasons to not like something new.
Right.
But he has recently come out and said, you know what? I think I was wrong. I think one of the main things that digital gives us that traditional print doesn't is you can reach a larger audience a lot easier with digital. And that's what, you know, one of the things he pointed out, is that yes, he still loves the brick and mortar, comic book shops, but you know, there are people in other countries that would never get to an American comic book shop, and maybe they don't even have comic book shops at all, you know,
right.
Yet they can go on Comixology and download his latest book, you know, which is, Starlight is his newest book that's coming out.
Yeah. But it's, you know, and along those lines, I think, yes, it's a mistake to discount digital. It's the direction that people want things to go. It's the method of consumption of the newer generation, that the way they want to consume things. And to scoff at it, to discount it as, you know, not being the right direction or being a mistake is not really understanding the benefits fully. And, you know, on top of the fact that, yes, you can reach a broader audience, it also means that you're saving cost. Like, your bottom line could be better, because if you're distributing less physical copies but still making the same number of sales, you're coming out on top.
True. I don't think...
And that's not even with an increase. Let's say you make the same number of sales for an issue without, right. you know, no increase in numbers, but half of those now are digital as opposed to physical paperback books. That's cutting your production costs in half. That's half the books you have to print. And as a result, that's, you know, the cost of a print is expensive. You have to, I mean, not hugely expensive. It's, you know, probably pennies on the dollar compared to the cover price. But at the same time, it's more expensive than not printing anything.
Well, right, there's that, but I also think, you know, the big boys, Marvel and DC, kind of look at it as they get additional sales, I think, through digital that they don't get in the comic book shops anymore.
Right, yet, that's the plus. That's the benefit.
Right, right.
Saying, you know, even if you didn't, but, you're still making it better.
But when you have the little independents...
Right, who don't have the reach.
Who don't have the reach, who don't have distribution in the comic book shops, it's a lot easier for them to just get the digital out there.
Right.
You know, as people heard a few episodes, or last week's episode, when we talked
to... I was supposed to listen to that?
When we talked to Steve Scott and James Maddox about Blue Nemesis, you know, their main distribution model right now is going to be digital. It's going to be Comixology. You know,
that does make it a double-edged sword, though. I mean,
how so?
on the one side, the larger companies can save a lot of money because they don't have to, they don't have to spend money on actual resources like paper and stuff. But on the other side, that means all the independent guys have a more level playing field, and they can actually become more competition than they would have in the original.
It's a democratization of content, but
yes.
At the same time, you know, with democratization of content, like this is not the first medium where we've seen that. Like we see that with
podcasts,
with music. Yeah, don't even get me started there. But you know, we've seen that with music and with videos via YouTube and other channels where you can get access to music and to content that you would never have had access to before. And there's floodgates of it. But you know, as you know, it's only as good as its reach. You know, and things drop off. Like things, you know, some things just end up being a fad because they can't reach anyone. They can't make any money off of it. Like certain podcasts about superheroes and things like that. Not this one, by the way.
No, I wouldn't be talking about this one.
But that democratization of content, it does put some noise in the game, but that noise is gonna fizzle out. People will find the things that they care about and are interested in, and they'll rise to the top. I mean, you know, there was a similar backlash along those lines with that type of content when it came to Amazon, when they sort of, you know, undercut around publishers to allow people to publish their own works of fiction in as digital books directly through Amazon and not have to go through a publishing house. Is it necessarily the same level of quality? It's the jury's still out, but you know, and it makes for opportunities for people who wouldn't otherwise get signed to a publisher to write the fiction that they have in their head. And if it sucks, they're not going to sell it. So,
right? No, and it's true. I mean, and there is though. I mean, there is the rare occasion like the Friday song that you know becomes real popular on YouTube. But it becomes popular because
that's like, you know, I consider that a form of internet rubbernecking.
Yeah. Yep. Excellent description. I like
that. Which makes you wonder why we don't have more downloads, but,
you can only look so long.
That's true.
There's only so much horror you can take.
But yeah, no, and it's, you know, it's one of the things, it actually drives me nuts, when I listen to The Nerdist and Kevin Smith, you know, talk about podcasts and like, oh, well, you know, the internet is a good, level playing ground and the good stuff rises to the top. And it's true. But when you're already somebody like Chris Hardwick or Kevin Smith and you go make a podcast, you already had an audience before you started, you know, so those people are going to seek you out and listen to your content. When you're somebody new coming in, you know, you can make a quality podcast like Superhero Speak, but you have to find your audience.
Who's doing that? And why did they steal our name?
I don't know. what was that one article I sent you? Because speaking of comic books, apparently...
That's all we do is speak of comic books. What are you talking about?
apparently, they're saying that... I read an article on Comic Book Resources today, where they're saying gimmick covers might make a comeback.
Oh, please. That's part of what got me out of comic books in like the early 90s. Is yeah. You could not keep up with it. It's like, yes, this comic book, there's 8 different covers, and of each different type of cover, there's like a foil version, and then, you know, it just got way too much.
Right. And you know what? I will never see any of them because I read all of my comics digitally.
So it's, yeah, and it's funny because they don't really state any, sorry about that.
Wow, you're really passionate today.
Like, they're just said that there's a there's an event from Valiant coming out, and they're talking about using gimmick covers again, but there's not like nothing definite about what they're doing.
Yeah, there's no examples necessarily of what they're gonna do.
Right, exactly. There's no examples of this cover that they're this gimmick cover or whatever. And then the article goes in and talks about all the stuff that we suffered through in the 90s. Like the hologram covers, the embossed covers.
When holograms were popular, Jesus. That was...
The foil covers. Yeah,
Some of the covers that they talk about in there, I've actually got a lot of those because I collected, I can't tell you how many boxes of comics I've got from like 88 to 94. And they had the Ghost Rider one that was glow in the dark.
Yes. <You know? laughs> I remember that one. That was the thing. And we all ate it up because it was these variant covers are going to be worth money. Not when they print 30,000 of them.
Yeah, and everybody's collecting them and they're buying them with the acid-free Mylar packages so they can just stick them in a safe box in a bank.
Right. Yes. So I beg you, Valiant, Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, don't start it again, please.
I mean, I can see them doing it, you know, once in a while for like, okay, this is the 100th of the comic book and of this series and, you know, doing something special like that. But, you know, in this day and age with, like Ben said, you know, he's going to be reading all of his digitally. All you're going to do is turn people off or, you know, just make them feel it's not worth trying to collect them all. And then they stop buying as much as they would have normally.
Right. I also say, please don't do a gimmick like where you reboot your whole universe and start everything back off at number one. Oh,
that's too late.
Sorry.
That ship has sailed.
Yeah. Sorry. Darn it.
No, actually it hasn't because Marvel's due for that next.
They were smart about just spinning it off into its own world. That's what the Ultimate Universe is for. Their test kitchen.
But now you have to follow two universes. It's kind of...
Well, I'm okay with that to some extent. But speaking of rebooting things... we haven't really talked much in the podcast about the Fantastic Four reboot.
Oh, I like what they're talking about there. I like it. It's gonna be the Fantastic Four Rises or Fantastic Four Begins.
And yeah.
Hopefully it's not Rises because we don't want the Fantastic Four that they deserve and not the ones they need or whatever.
Right. So to sort of summarize for our less informed fans, they have apparently cast people to play all these different parts. They have Miles Teller playing the part of Reed Richards. Very young. It's a very young cast in general. They have Kate Mara playing Sue Storm. They have Jamie Bell as the Thing, or Ben Grimm. And the more unusual is, which we've talked about before, is Michael B. Jordan as the Human Torch. Now, and we've talked about this a couple times, it's not really out of nowhere. I'm assuming, for our listeners who don't know who Michael B. Jordan is, feel free to look him up, but he's black. And we know that he and Sue Storm are supposed to be brother-sister. I'm going to assume that they're adopted, or one of them is adopted, or something along those lines, to explain the biracial family there.
Or their mother had two baby daddies.
I guess so. He doesn't look mixed, though.
I don't know if he can
pull that off, per se. But, you know, aside from the race change that they're doing there, the other weird one with it is the guy they have for Ben Grimm, because he's sort of he's tallish, but he's lanky. He's not very built. which pretty much presumes that it's going to have to be a CG version of the thing once they get to that phase.
Well, maybe not. He said something about it's not going to be some guy walking around in what looks like latex rock leather or whatever.
Right, right. But so. I think they've suggested, I think one of the things that people have talked about regarding this character, he's done motion capture work in the past. So I think it's, they feel that that's fitting for him to play that role because motion capture is likely the way you're going to see the thing show up on the screen.
Hmm.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, the thing is with the thing, I don't think like the original non-released Fantastic Four movie.
Oh yeah,
it looked really bad. I will say that.
Yeah. They spent all their money on the costume for the thing. Literally, like half the budget was gone. Yeah. Already.
But I don't think he looked bad in the. The remake. The
Michael Chiklis version?
Yeah.
I agree. I don't think he looks bad. My only issue with it is that he didn't look big enough. Like, I think in the first scene where they sort of had him break out in that look, they made him look unusually big as far as camera angles and things like that. But then you see other scenes where he'd be standing next to Sue and only be like half a head taller than her. You know, so I don't think it fit. He should be maybe not as big as the Hulk was in Avengers, but somewhere in between normal size and that, you know? So I think.
I guess. I've never thought of him being really big, but.
Yeah. Do you have a problem with the way that the Hulk was portrayed in the Avengers?
No, but then, I will say, though, if you go back and rewatch it, he does change size a couple times in the movie.
Yeah, but the Hulk can do that.
Okay.
It's precedented in his case.
This is
yeah,
true.
Yeah, the matter he gets, the stronger he gets, the bigger he gets.
Bigger he gets, exactly. As a matter of fact, they did that a little too much, I think, in Ang Lee's Hulk.
Oh, well, yeah.
That was just nutty size transformation going on there.
Yeah.
but the other comment that with that interview that John is alluding to is he also said, you know, they're not going to have the stretchy dude. Like, wait, let me find the article.
Well, I think that what they're alluding to is they're not going for the action comedy type version of the film that they went for originally. You know, they're trying to make this more of a action film, a little bit more gritty, a little bit more realistic. It's supposed to fit with the X-Men universe that they've established, and I'd imagine thematically it'll also fit similarly to those films as well.
But then that doesn't fit with the Fantastic Four, because, I mean...
It doesn't have to fit with the Fantastic Four, that's what I'm saying. I mean, this version of the Fantastic Four is not a continuation.
But it's always been a family book, it's always been... There's always been a comedic aspect to it.
Not really.
Well, yes and no. I'll give you that, because there's always the whole relationship between Ben Grimm and Johnny Storm is... always been a little comedically adversarial. Mm-hmm. The thing is always, you know, saying, you know, kind of goofy things. But I think at the same time, I think they can go not dark per se, but a little bit more, a little less lighthearted, a little bit more grounded than what they did in the first two takes at the Fantastic Four.
I don't know. We'll see. I have to wait to see at least a preview to... Pass too much judgment.
I'll tell you, I won't be impressed until they use their powers like real superheroes could use those powers. I mean, seriously, the animation had it right. Sue Storm is literally one of the most powerful superheroes there are because all she has to do is walk up to somebody, throw a shield around them, lock off their air, and they're done.
Yep.
I mean, literally, that's it. She could take out just about anybody just like that. Yes. Yeah. You know,
she could form a shield bubble in their heart and grow it until they die.
Yeah. Or you know, with Storm, I mean, come on.
It's very dark.
Yeah, he could pretty much melt anybody.
Yeah.
You guys just went very, very dark.
I didn't say that they should go that dark. We're just saying that their powers should be illustrated in a way that is...
more realistic.
Exactly. And more... Exemplary.
So the Fantastic...
If you're a fan, you don't want to be treated like an imbecile.
Right.
And you don't want them to, you know, do stupid things with their powers just to create a conflict. You want the you want the bad guys to rise to the occasion and be real bad guys and real threats, so that the good guys can actually be good, you know, be heroes, and rise to the occasion.
Right. And you know, what I'd like to see is, yes, what you're saying, I'd like to see their powers realized and used. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be some degree of, you know, figuring things out that they have to go through to, you know, just baseline things and understand what their powers are, what they're capable of. But hopefully they can do it a little bit more succinctly than they did in the first take of this. And maybe we can get to a point where we can see them, like, really using their powers, and maybe not on, like we were demonstrating by melting people and things like that, but doing things that show how powerful they can be.
Yeah, I agree. The first Fantastic Four movie spent too much time of them in the hospital trying to figure out what their powers were, and then trying to figure out who they were after they got the powers, and it was like, really?
Well, they spent too much time on the guys. I mean, as long as Jessica Alba was trying to figure out the other stuff, that was fine for me. Yeah. Just saying.
At least in the second one, they had that power jumping thing, so she got to be on fire and then naked.
Yeah. So.
Your favorite scene of
that was just horrible. Yeah.
Speaking of more non-dude action, I actually heard somewhere a rumor that Doom may be gender bent in this movie.
Ugh.
and so goes the entire fan base. Oh.
All right, you know what? Fine, I will take a no, I won't. But you know, fine. You're gonna race bend Johnny Storm. Why do you have to gender bend Dr. Doom? I mean, really?
Why not?
Seriously, if you want to be more diverse, come up with some new heroes. You know, expand the universe. Don't try to continually. You lose the original fans.
Yeah.
You're only. It's too big a risk. I think. It just, you know, and it's not the same.
Right.
You might as well just create new heroes.
There's another way to look at this, though. So they go through this effort and they make stupid decisions like that and they screw it up and it flops. And then they have an excuse for Marvel to take it back.
This is true.
And do something amazing with it.
You think Stan Lee is sitting there whispering to them, "Oh, it'd be really great if you made one of them black, and if you made Doom a woman, oh, that would really sell to the fans. Trust me."
I think you might be right. I think you're onto something there, John.
Like, we'll make Mr. Fantastic stretchy, but only in his butt.
Oh, you know what? Even better, I'm sure he's sitting there going, "You know what? It'd be really great if you brought the robot back,
Herbie." Yes, fans love Herbie.
Yes. I wonder if anybody remembers who Herbie is.
If you can get the Fantasticar in there,
Does anybody remember what the robot was there for? Why?
I don't remember exactly.
It was stupid. Stupid American censorship back when the cartoon was running. Having a man on fire was just considered too much for our precious snowflakes to deal with. So they replaced him with Herbie the Robot.
That's funny.
It. Michael B. Jordan is going to be Herbie.
Bingo.
See, we're all upset that he's going to be Johnny Storm, but no, he's actually Herbie, everyone. Yes.
Awesome. That is funny, and I didn't realize that they replaced him with her because it was so long ago that I saw those. But I do catch that in like the Marvel mashups sometimes. That I was like, why do they have Herbie in there all the time and they don't have the Human Torch? It just seems.
Yeah. Oh, they did lots of that. Like there was G-Force or Gatchaman, and they usually when they threw their weapons, they were cutting people's heads off. But in the American version, they cut all that out, but they had to replace all that time, so they replaced it with another robot at the home base doing stupid things and doing sight gags.
See, now, but if it goes back to Marvel, who's now owned by Disney, they could have Herbie the Love Bug.
Oh, God. They built him into a car.
And thus true evil was born.
So they merged Herbie and the Fantasticar into a single character.
Yes.
That is the lamest version of Kit ever.
Even lamer than the original, yes.
Yeah, I don't know. Mr. Feeny was a pretty lame Kit.
Yeah, but a VW Bug version of Kit, that's pretty lame.
Who can't go on fire because, you know, kids might take it the wrong way.
Oh, God. Yeah. Kids are a hell of a lot smarter than most of these guys seem to think.
Yeah, well, you know? It's things like that, though. The same sort of decisions is why, like, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, for instance, the entirety of the foot soldiers were all robots so that the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles could defeat them and there was no violence.
Yeah. Sure. Although in the new version of that, they have an actual reason why some of the foot soldiers are robots, but they're still playing the, you know, oh, the robots get totally destroyed, but when they're fighting the regular Foot Clan, oh, I just knocked them out.
Yes.
So.
And we actually talked about Captain America, but we skipped over a piece of Captain America news.
You mean the Baron von Strucker news?
No, I forgot about Baron von Strucker.
Yeah, all right, that's two pieces of news.
Actually, yes. That's not even attached. So yeah, he's actually showing up in the Avengers: Age of Ultron. Baron von Strucker, played by Thomas Kretschmann. But he actually has a multi-picture deal.
Yes.
So we may see him more than once.
I think, you know, he would work in probably Captain America 3, which has been confirmed.
Nice.
It's in pre-production right now.
Wait, they're in pre-production already for Captain America 3?
Yes. Yes, they are.
Jeez. Well, I can appreciate that. It's just startling.
And so that means Hydra's around, though. Which is an enemy of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes. Well, they've been lying low since they got their asses handed to them during World War II.
Yes. Yes, they've been hiding, and now they're coming back. With a vengeance.
I just hope Coulson and friends have, you know, kept their brooms handy, because I have to clean up after them from the Captain America 3. And...
I am curious what the tie-in is going to be.
Yeah.
Actually, if you saw the, and we'll be talking about this more tomorrow.
Or yesterday,
depending on when you're listening to this podcast.
If you're not one of the three of us, it will have been yesterday.
Mm-hmm. they're kicking off an event in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. With this week's episode. And it looks like they're building up to a big tie-in with everything. You know, in fact, in the clip, they showed Captain America's shield. So,
yes. What did they call it? They had a name for it.
I can't remember off the top of my head. Talks amongst yourselves. I'll find it.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, great. We got dead air.
You're talking.
Okay.
How's it going?
Yeah. It's going good. Well, while he looks that up, the other thing with Captain America is the third and final trailer they're releasing is going to be 11 minutes long.
I did hear about that. That is a really long trailer. It's not unprecedented. They've done trailers like that, but usually only in theaters.
Right, right.
And only like during special 3D, like if you go see it in 3D IMAX, you'll see this 9-minute or 11-minute preview for this movie.
Right, but this is going to be like a prologue for the movie. So it'll be interesting. We'll see how much they reveal and...
So it's more like a vignette, not a trailer, I hope. Because I don't like when you get a trailer that basically describes the entire movie and then, you know...
Probably be like a 5-minute scene, you know, cut scene from the movie itself, followed by, you know, a montage of other stuff.
Right. Yeah, not probably. And I'm kind of looking forward to it. It'll be, I'm looking forward to this movie. It looks like it's going to be good. So, and we could save a lot of this for our Captain America episode coming up.
That we can.
Yes. Did you find it yet, John? I mean, Ben?
I did not. I don't know why I'm failing at this right now. Well, we'll talk about it tomorrow. I mean, yesterday. It'll all be clear then.
It'll all be clear then?
Yeah. Oh.
Or later.
Right. Later / earlier.
All right. Yes. Yes, we can leave that for Agents of Speak. So for those who aren't aware, yesterday we did Agents of Speak, which is a follow-up show for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and you can catch us live every Tuesday that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. airs on at 9 o'clock Eastern Time on our YouTube channel and our Google Plus page. So, yes, if you missed it, you can always go to our YouTube channel, users/superheroespeak on YouTube, and catch all the episodes you missed.
Wait, I missed it, Dave. Oh, wait, it didn't happen for us yet.
It's this whole time continuum thing. I know it confuses you.
It's all timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey ball of stuff.
Too many Doctor Who fans.
Yes.
Too many Doctors spoil the punch or something like that.
But I am not only a Doctor Who fan, but I'm a Jim Butcher fan, and his new book comes out on May 27th.
Yes. Oh, yes.
At some point, we have to talk about that. I mean, come on, we got to do superheroes other than those that have just had pictures.
For those of you who like books without pictures.
Okay. For the two of you that are out there.
I don't know. Do we have any fans that like books without pictures? I mean, you know.
If you do, let us know. If you're
addition to books with pictures. Not as opposed to.
If you're a fan of books without pictures, you know, write us. Let us know on our Facebook page. Tweet at us. We want to know.
And if you're a fan of pictures without books, you can send us some.
Yes.
But if you're a fan of books without pictures and that have more than a few words per page and, you know, is in at least like 14-point type or below, then read Jim Butcher's books.
Right. Especially if you like magic, wizards, fairies, vampires, werewolves, and minimal paranormal romance.
And gangsters.
And gangsters. And yes. Dragons.
And the city of Chicago.
And, yes, urban fantasy at its best.
Yes. And we are, of course, talking about the Dresden Files.
Mm, yes. Although his other series was pretty good. The Dresden Files I'm sorry to have brought it up at this point. I mean, we should work this into another
show.
We could
do an entire show just on this alone.
Well, this and other books that I'm sure we all like, yes. You know, but, his series has got to be one of the, it's got to be the best urban series there is, period. And the fact that he's up to book number, 14 now, and
I think so.
And it's looking like his entire series, because it's going to be 23 to 25 books.
Yes. You know? Which is great, because it's not just, you know, he's not just going on forever. He has a definitive plan, mm-hmm. And that just makes it even more exciting. Now, on the flip side, there's people who don't have definitive plans. NBC apparently is rebooting Heroes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Jar Jar Binks again.
And they're calling it Heroes Reborn, which
right.
I believe Marvel already did that in the 90s.
So I'm not sure what the hell they are going to do with it, if this is going to be completely its own, like, reboot type thing, or...
Unless this is Heroes the way it should have been, I don't, come on.
Heroes CC edition?
Yeah, you know at the end of the first season of the original series, there should have been a Dragon Ball Z-like fight in mid-air with explosions everywhere and mass destruction of the surrounding landscape.
So they dropped the ball on that.
Yeah.
And by the ball, I mean the special effects budget somehow went out the window, and they couldn't afford to do what they should have done.
So
then everybody got in touch with their feelings. Sorry, Dave.
Yes.
What you do is you reshoot the finale of the first season as the opening episode for the new show, and then you start from there and just go, okay, yeah, the other seasons after the first one, they didn't exist. This is what really happened.
Everything happened from that episode on was actually a dream.
It's not a dream. Have Hero pop up, screw everything up, have it finished the way it's supposed to be. Hero gets exploded so nothing can change finally, and then you go on from there.
Yeah.
That's it.
Fresh and clean and ready to go.
Yes. Well, having a time-traveling character is always a bad idea.
Yeah.
Just to correct you, John, real quick, Skin Game was actually book 15 of the Dresden Files.
That's right. Well, yeah, I was going to say, I thought it was
it's 15.
So the next one is 15.
Yeah. And you got, again, to anybody out there who's listening who likes books, that you got to love a guy who writes that many books, and then literally every piece, every vignette, every little short story that he writes, it's all canon for his entire series. So there's all these short stories hanging around all over the place in anthologies, in just scrap on his website, and it's all canon.
Yeah. Well, so much of it, he ended up actually putting out a collection himself called Side Jobs, which is awesome in and of its own right, having all those stories together.
Yeah, and he's going to do another one of those later on.
Yeah.
All right. So it's decided. We'll do a whole Dresden Files.
We'll do a book
episode when book 15 comes out.
Yeah, because I want to hear what books you guys read too that you like.
Yeah, I'm reading some stuff. That's all I got.
Wow, that's it, really?
Well, we're at an hour, guys, so you know.
Yeah, I think we're good here.
Yeah.
All right.
We've hit our quota.
We've annoyed enough people for this week.
Yay! Yes. Are you sure? We have a quota.
He means us, John.
Oh, okay.
So, boys and girls, as always, don't let your cape be caught in the door. Have a good week. Speaking of capes, you can tug on ours by joining the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+ at Superhero Speak. If you have any comments on my bad jokes, you can email me at dave@superheroespeak.com.
You can also subscribe to our podcast through iTunes, Stitcher, and various other channels. Or if you'd like to tease the beard of knowledge, you can email me at ben@superheroespeak.com.
We also occasionally rant about things on our website, superheroespeak.com. Or if you'd like to further discuss the prowess of Rainbow Dash versus anybody in the greater geek universe, you can email me at john@superheroespeak.com.
And don't forget to check out our Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. companion show, Agents of Speak, which you can watch live most Tuesdays around 9 p.m. on our Google+ page, or archived on our YouTube channel. Now let go of our cape.